That's what John Hay said.
Absolutely.
And they become like family.
And that's what the research also is. It's expensive, but we're basically going to pay for it.
I second that.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Emilio Uriasti, Vice Chair of the LERIC Executive Board. I'm calling this LERIC regular meeting to order. It is now 1:34 p.m. on November 16th, 2018. I'd like to ask, very appropriately, citizenship teacher and ESL teacher Greg Dobie to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Face on a flag. Put your right hand on your heart as I instruct my students every Saturday morning. And please take off any hat. Thank you very much. And let's say this together. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. Is there a motion to approve the agenda and or to request to move items from the consent agenda to action items?
Move approval of the agenda.
Second. Any discussion?
I just wanted to ask in regards to my name on the agenda. My last name is Bell, J-A-C-Q-U-E-D.
J-A-C.
J-A-Z?
No, J-A-C as in cat.
Oh, C, okay, thank you. Q-U-E-Z?
Yes.
And we apologize, so noted. Okay, given that there is no discussion, we will vote on the agenda here. All those in favor of approving the agenda as presented, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the agenda is accepted. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from October 19th, 2018? From the regular board meeting at that date.
Yeah, I'll move we approve the minutes of October 2018.
Thank you, Mr. Stark. Do we have a second?
I can second that.
And Ms. Hakis with a C, seconds. All right. Do we have any discussion? All right. Appears not. So all those in favor of approving the minutes from the October 19th regular board meeting, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Thank you. Do we have any speakers that wish to address the board at this time? No speakers noted. So in that case, then, we will now go to the program update section, and this is about innovation and best practices. And today we have a presentation from Jennifer Bedon and Alma Blanco from the Los Angeles Unified School District, and they will share some of the successes from the summer IET program.
Thank you very much for having us here today. My name is Jennifer Bedon. I'm the Integrated Education and Training Teacher Advisor for LAUSD, and I'm here with Ms. Alma Blanco, who will be speaking a little bit later. And we're here to talk about our IET summer program that we just ran and elected. Share some best practices. So the idea, the vision behind our summer program was really to empower our schools to create and implement innovative IET programs that serve as on-ramp for ESL students to enter sector-specific career pathways. Our purpose was had several focuses. The first one was really so that we could learn how to do this work and really try and put our best efforts in to figure it out. We wanted to also try out the co-teaching model of IET in a really intentional way. And, of course, we wanted to create on-ramps for ESL students to introduce them to our programs and help them enter career pathways. So the first sort of, this came in several phases. So step one, the first phase that we did was we asked the administrators of our 11 schools to come together so that they could work on designing these programs. We initially had to develop a common understanding of IET, and then we created an action plan using a template so that each program met specific requirements. So what we looked at was really, again, understanding what is IET and what are all of the pieces necessary. We looked at how IET fits onto career pathways and what that means in terms of longer-term planning. And then we worked on an action plan that included a vision for each IET program. And it involved a series of decisions that need to be made about which of the pieces and components we're going to include. So once the administrators had decided how they wanted to design their programs, then we had to develop projects. So we brought in the CTE teachers. Again, we had to develop a common understanding of what is IET. And then we asked the CTE teachers to come up with some short-term projects that they could do in a four-week program. And we aligned those projects with the CTE core competencies. So, for example, this is one of the flyers that we created to promote our program. This is for a construction class. So the ESL students over the summer would learn English and how to repair drywall, repair a toilet, and fix a garbage disposal. For our managerial program, this is our managerial promotional flyer. You know, we asked students if they wanted to come in to learn how to manage your nails, create nail art, and do a paraffin wax treatment. So step three, once each program had its project designed, then we brought in our ESL people. And our ESL teachers and our CTE teachers sat down and developed integrated long-range lesson plans that included all of the components that would be necessary to run these classes down the ground in the classroom. And so this is a piece of that long-range lesson plan, so which included, we had to identify what are the technical skills, what are the projects, what are your CTE competencies, and then looking at what kind of procedures would they be learning, and then integrate the language skills into that, and then, of course, the workforce prep activities. Once we had our programs designed, we had our long-range lesson plans ready, then we brought our teachers together. And the teachers had to come together again to develop a common understanding of what it is they were going to be doing. They came together to learn about co-teaching, to practice the co-teaching, and then to work on developing the daily lesson plan. So we had quite a successful summer. We had 11 of our schools participate. We created 30 IET programs that covered 10 industry sectors. We had 62 instructors and 32 hours of teacher professional development. We enrolled 571 students with an 86% completion rate. So I'm going to pass the microphone over to Ms. Blanco, who is the cosmetology and manicuring teacher at Abrams Freedom and Occupational Center, so you can hear about her experiences down the drain.
Thank you very much, Jane. Thank you. My name is Ava Blanco. I teach at Abrams Freedom and Occupational Center. I've been here for the past 15 years. I've been doing cosmetology. Wow, you might be enjoying it. For the past 30 years. So thank you for having me here today. Our first slide is going to be on the mandatory EIT program, the technical skills that we had to teach for them. First of all, it was a safety. It was important for me to make sure that we had the safety to be a self-managed. So we had to spend a lot of time with them on that. Then how to polish. Everybody seems to be polished, but there's a certain technique. So I showed the technique, the procedure on how to polish. Then after the mandatory, once that they had safety, then we were able to move on a parenting wax. A parenting wax is kind of a gift. That's like a little treat that someone gets. If you're in a mandatory, you know what a parenting feels like. And then we did the nail art. If you look at that picture, I said to them, I asked for each of them three. There's a lot of them. It was up to them which one they chose. And if they couldn't, then I would do them a sticker or something. But at least it was a goal for them. But most of all, the IT manager, the basic skills and workforce preparation was the key to everything. It was important that they use their language, English. Make sure that when they came in English for them to start with. So what we did was we communicated. So they needed it for the clients. So I had to say, welcome, please, thank you. Would you like this color polished? Can I help you? So it was important that we did that. So what we did was we did our communication with them. We did writing skills. So what we did was we had them write it down with that ESL teacher, and then that was the teacher with them. So then in the morning, they would practice. So by the afternoon, they would switch, and they would become the customer, and they would become the client. So then that way, they had an idea that once they got better, they would be able to. So one day, we have to become the client, and the other one would become the operator. So then, we did So I had to teach them those soft skills. It was so important to be there on time, reliability. That was the key to this program that we had. It was amazing that we had to be able to use those soft skills. We started to design the salon, giving them an idea of what their future would be like. So they tend to do, they ended up having to work on the computer. So they had they need to learn how to do like a resume. How to go ahead and go online and figure these things out. It's important for like a job because now it's no longer on paper. If you want a job, you say, but go online. And it's like, huh? So they had to learn how to turn on the computer, how to look for certain things on the computer. So then we basically, what we did was we did like a little flyer. Okay, let me find this one. So on this flyer, the lady Maria, she's showing us right now her Mickey Mouse. That's kind of small, you see from there. But she did this Mickey Mouse one. And it was this 4-week program. They thought they were only going to do polish, but they realized that in that they ended up loving it. So I had 4 students registered in my, this was a summer program, and 4 of them registered in my cosmetology program. 2 for manicuring and 2 for cosmetology. So she's young lady here, she made this flyer, beautiful flyer, and it reads, I'm going to read it to you so you can see it there. And it reads, we took this class because we had to polish our nails, but we didn't know how to do it. We learned how to do manicure, parafine, nail art, repair, mixed colors, clean the implements, and use of manicuring. We are prepared to have a new life. Thanks. That touched me because they learned it and she put this on the flyer that she uses it with her family. So she wants to do like a little manicure, a little polish. So she said for Christmas, she don't have a lot of money. So she did a little card that says, Merry Christmas and come for a manicure, come for a nail art. So no money was exchanged. I mean, that alone is the purpose when they can go in and give that service. The next one is, she's my, I don't want to say special, but I guess I would say she's special because she went in my manicuring class and now she's the one that registered into my cosmetology. So what we did was, Jessica's her name, and what she did was she did a manicuring and I had her start off with just doing nails and she said, I want more. I'm like, oh, okay, so I just wanted to do a little bit at a time. And nope, she wanted more. I'm like, okay. So what I did was I entered her in a contest. And we had it, and in fact, we went to a competition and she won first place. She won with her nails and the hair. It was like, wow. So now come January, I enrolled her now into Skills USA. So my IET going to Skills. Thank you.
Just a couple of comments, first of all. Really want to thank both Ms. Redone and Ms. Blanco for really just doing a fabulous job with this program. I had the opportunity to visit your class, and it was just one of the things that was so impressive was just seeing the unique energy in the room with students. They were engaged in a particular way that I think was really special. Because they were really there because obviously they wanted to be. But it was really a case of meeting the students exactly where they were at. And I think the most exciting thing for me was that it really made CTE accessible to our English language learners in a way that maybe traditionally we haven't done as much in the past. So congratulations to you, Ms. Padone, and particularly congratulating Ms. Padone as well for all the professional development that was designed and implemented as part of this project. A tremendous amount of work went into it, and just, again, represents sort of a first sort of go at this, and we hope to do more and get better at it as we go. But I thought it was tremendously successful from what I saw. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Miller.
Yes, again, I echo Mr. Stark's comments. A great presentation, great program. I'm a little curious about number of students enrolled, any placement data that you have about where these students ended up, if you have any information like that.
So I don't have placement data yet for all of the 571 students. They primarily came from our ESL program and then enrolled in our IEP summer program. But I don't have that all of that transitional data yet. I just was able to compile the data for the 193 class.
So 571 students total in your IEP curriculum? And how many different programs was that?
That was 30 different programs.
30 different programs. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Yep.
I have a couple of questions. Knowing how difficult things can be, share with us how the selection of teachers was done and that pairing or that marriage that occurs and what training they were given.
So selection of teachers turned out to be extremely important, as you're highlighting. We have a few parameters of who had first priority to work over the summer, so it wasn't, so teachers did apply for the positions, but certain teachers had priority over others based on when they could work before and different regulations. So it wasn't entirely an administrative decision on who worked and who didn't. Knowing that, we really tried to, during our professional development, share with them what this really meant to spend 4 hours for instructional hours, and then 1 hour of planning each day with this person. So we did a lot of team building, we did a lot of practicing, we did a lot of looking at videos to understand what it was about, and we developed a lot of tools to help them determine what each teacher would be doing at any particular point during the day. By the end of it, teachers really identified, we asked them as in their reflection meeting, if they were to design these programs again, would they want to do them in more of an alternating model where they weren't necessarily in the same room at the same time? Across the board, they chose to co-teach again. So, but the one characteristic that they identified that was really important to them was flexibility in their partner. So that sort of marriage and that partnership is extremely important. But they really seem to enjoy it.
Great. And my second question is, would you share with us regarding these two programs, the construction and the cosmetology, what certificate did the students earn at the end?
So because it was only a four-week program, the students earned an IEP certificate of completion that they had completed this particular course. They were not, after 4 weeks, they weren't certified. They didn't receive a complete CTE certificate in those two programs. In our automotive program at Harbor, our teacher was able to certify his students with a Valvoline certification, and there were 4 Valvoline certifications that they did achieve in those 4-week programs.
Thank you.
I just wanted to also repeat, and I did go to the training, so I would like to thank you for that, me being the rookie in the group. But I also wanted to ask you, if you did ask that question immediately about the IUT certificate of completion, but did you find it by designing it in summer, you know, 4 weeks as opposed to an 8-week course, that the numbers were a little bit higher because it was a shorter term? Did it really matter? Or did it help?
So I think what you're getting at is, in general, these programs do tend to be, when you're running a fuller, longer program, the numbers in the classroom do tend to be a little bit smaller, because you generally want to take students that are at least at, say, a level 3 above ESL level. That tends to be a smaller population than your sort of larger 1 and 2 level. So yes, during the summer, but we did stick to those guidelines during the summer of level 3 and up.
And one more question. In regards to that particular skill, that would you think adults with disabilities would take about the same amount of time, 4 weeks, to attain that skill of being able to paint?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
Beth Blanco does have...
What?
She has one hearing impaired student in her IUT management program now. That didn't go through the 4 weeks, though.
And believe it or not, they pay more attention because she's focused. She doesn't have all the other people talking around there that can sidetrack her. So the minute I show her how to do that one particular polish thing, then she knows she focuses. So her outcome is a lot better than some of my other students. So it really benefits her too, because it's a sense of pride that I can do this too.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just one last thing. I think as we're getting into our next, you know, 3-year planning cycle, it would be really helpful, I think, and valuable, because we know IET is a big priority for both on the state side and federal side, and funding as well. To really look at how we can maybe scale up, potentially, you know, if we're saying this is the best practice, right? Or there may be other examples from the other districts as well. They're really kind of calling out IET as a major focus, hopefully in our next 3-year cycle, because it is, you know, labor intensive, a lot of resources go into it, a lot of planning, PD, etc. And I just think it's certainly an area that we should consider as really being a major focus. And I think part of that, I see this as really one of those areas where we can do a better job partnering with the college. For example, if we're looking at co-teaching, how come we can't pair up an adult ed teacher with a community college instructor, right? CTE and basic skills, right? Dual enrollment, right? I think there's a lot of opportunities here that I'd like to see us kind of get deeper on as we, you know, kind of pursue this more fully in the next few years. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you, ladies, and I just have to say that this is, for me, one of the things I enjoy about being in a consortium is hearing these wonderful ideas and actually seeing that they were put into action and all the thought and planning that went into it. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
And now I will introduce Michelle Steele and Justin Gorns, who will provide LARIC office updates.
Good afternoon. We're providing the LARIC office updates on behalf of Lanji. Just before he took off on an airplane yesterday, we finalized what we're going to share. So with regard to item number one there, with an update on the governance roles and responsibilities recommendations request from our last workshop. I'd like to read. The point persons team would like to suggest additional time to provide a more comprehensive report that includes additional suggestions for the organizational structure. The PPT also recommends that we have a facilitated discussion about organizational structure in an upcoming workshop. Additionally, the PDC felt that the workshops with funding, just kind of go along with number, item number three on here too. The PDC felt that the workshop on funding research should also be facilitated, and that it should perhaps take place after we have had appropriately addressed the organizational structure.
Any questions there from the board? I would just say that personally that would make sense to me, and I would be personally, my vote, I would be supportive of that, of giving a little more time and making sure that we look at everything before we make any decisions in terms of any potential changes in governance.
And then I would add that I think we need to talk about who would be facilitating us. If we bring in somebody from the outside, I'd like to see a couple of options relative to who that might be. If, in fact, we get into a detailed conversation about governance or about the funding model and what have you, I think we might need a facilitator to help us through that.
Well, one of the things that Lindsay asked me to share as well is that in the PPT meeting, it was recommended that Lindsay reach out to our past facilitator, Bridget Marshall, to check on her availability in case she wanted to have a facilitator for the next meeting. And Lindsay just wanted you to know that she indicated she's not available for the December 7th workshop, but she is available in January for the first meeting.
Yeah, like I said, I'd like to see some options. I'm not sure that I want to go with Bridget personally again.
Yeah, I guess my question is, and maybe some folks want to speak to it here, was there some discussion about why a facilitator wouldn't be necessary in this case? Do we feel like it's sort of like these are pretty high charge topics, and we feel like we need someone to keep us from jumping out of our seats, or I'm just kind of wondering what would be the role, and why would we feel like we would need a facilitator?
And perhaps before staff responds, let me give a shot at that. I would be willing to give it a shot without the facilitator first, and then if we found we needed one, then we can go from there. I feel comfortable with that.
Yes, I mean, my official position is that this is just a recommendation of the PPC at the meeting, so if they're the ones who felt that they needed a facilitator, so it might be good to ask them what their thoughts are about that.
And also, I'll just add real quick that we are about to start a regional planning process, and some of this may come out of that process. So I don't know, we don't want to get the cart too far out in front of the horse in that sense.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Miller on that point. I think we should look at, if we feel there is a need to revisit some of these issues, and if so, what might those be? And it could be that in some cases maybe we do want a facilitator, other cases maybe we feel comfortable kind of addressing those as a group. But I guess I wouldn't necessarily say we need to move forward with the facilitator yet until we were clear about the impact that's necessary. Just my opinion.
So you seem a little reticent to me. I'm not a psychologist, but you seem a little reticent to me. Would it be appropriate to have any of the point persons respond to why they feel that a facilitator would be a good option here?
We had a very robust discussion. Adrian Ann Mullins for the record. And I think really to try what you proposed was to try and have a conversation first. And I think some of it will organically probably bubble up when we're doing our regional planning, because different items are part of that regional planning process. We want it, and I'm going to speak collectively, so, but I know my point people can hear will correct me if I step out of tune here. Is that we really wanted to make sure we had the room and the space to have some of the courageous conversations that we want to address about roles and structure, and where we want to grow. Since our current structure was based when we were at 1886, and we weren't living our plan. Now we're 3 years, or fourth year in, it looks different. We want to make sure we have, the analogy, having the right people in the right place on the bus, and do we need to add more seats on the bus, or do we need to shuffle that? and that we wanted to really have a, you know, look at that and see where that looks, what that looks like at that point. Also with the formula, we wanted to make sure that we had a global look of all the different types of formulas that were out there and how they work well, or maybe they work well or they don't work well, but you know, really having a thorough conversation and understanding what those formulas look like and making sure that, you know, we really exhaust all of our possibilities.
Yeah, to piggyback on what you just mentioned, Dr. Mullen, I saw something recently, and I can't remember if it was the AEP newsletter, or maybe it was the Chancellor's Office newsletter, I think I forwarded it to staff, in terms of looking at that. I know there's some webinars and upcoming PD around student-centered funding formulas, right? So that just kind of jumped out at me. It's like, hey, instead of trying to potentially recreate the wheel, let's kind of see where the state is moving in this area and get educated on that, and then that could be something we want to sort of build upon as we have our discussion. So I appreciate that.
Is it fair that during the regional planning process some of these topics are going to bubble up and we might have an opportunity to talk about some of these things during that process? I see our consultant is here.
My basic philosophy is that this scale of great concepts and records, my philosophy is usually your structure to follow strategy. The form follows structure. And so I do think if you can take your time to think about governance, maybe this scale comes out of this next 3-year regional plan. I don't know if you have to rush into making decisions on governance, but it will allow you to understand better what kinds of challenges you want to take on and what kind of engagement you want to have in a governance process going forward. In terms of the funding allocations, having been involved with that 3 years ago, that's probably a more heated discussion, mm-hmm. where it may be helpful if you had a neutral person to make sure all 5 districts were able to have their issues, terms, criteria, related to the criteria in the consideration. But again, I think you can play that by ear. Is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you. Adrian, you want to...
Dr. Mullen?
And the other, coupled with what Steele presented earlier about the point of people perspective is, we did our last workshop, and then we had recommendations. So we had parts of the recommendations that we wanted to visit further and deeper. So we wanted to make sure whatever we push forward has a very global look at it, you know, that we're not pushing for parts and pieces, that we're pushing forward something that is connected, is linked, and it makes sense for where we're at now, you know, looking at where we've been, you know, where we're at now and where we plan to go. And so we really, we had a very robust discussion, at least two of them. Very robust. And I welcome that because I think it's important. We really push this grant a lot from the middle. So we want to make sure that we are addressing, you know, the responsibility that we have to our districts and to the executive team at the same time. And we realized that there were some missing links that we wanted to make sure that we were able to capture, and we wanted to make sure we did it thoughtfully and in the right scope. So we wanted to hold it back at this point to make sure we had the time on task to do that. So I think that's really important to bring forward.
Thank you. So at this time, are we in agreement that we would be in agreement with the point persons about proceeding a little bit, I guess, putting the brakes here a little bit and giving them more time? Is that what I'm hearing regarding the issue of governance and a presentation?
Right, so there's the recommendations, and then there's also a December 7th meeting that is intended, a workshop, to be, it's a funding research presentation as well, and so there's those two items that are coming out. One was required today. We were asked as staff to provide this today. So we're trying to say, yes, we'd like to delay that, potentially January.
And then December 7th address, the workshop instead would be on governance?
it could be that way, or it could be that that also happens in January, and then maybe, you know, we're supposed to be starting potentially the meetings for three-year planning in January, early February, so it might be that we just move that meeting altogether.
So the December 7th meeting, yeah. Just moving it all together to January.
That's a suggestion.
Okay.
So maybe this is a, I don't know, this is a question maybe for staff. What are there any key decision points that are necessary to keep us on track? I'm fine delaying things in the interest of let's get it right if we need more time. But I'm also concerned, you know, we do have a timeline, and there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, putting work groups together, engagement of staff, all those things. That's a big wheel to crank up, particularly when you look at the players and the districts involved. So I just want to make sure, are there any decision points that need to be made sooner rather than later? And if so, what are those decision points? I just wouldn't want to kick something down the road later on we're going to regret and say, oh, wait a minute, we should make a decision sooner.
Well, with regards to our recommendations, there are many of the things that we're recommending we do that are already in action. So those things will continue to be in action. There's professional development framework. There's, you know, working on teacher engagement through our marketing plan that we're already in action about. With regards to work groups, our recommendations were let's do the kickoff with regards to the three-year planning and put the work groups re-engagement back to that. And then we can look at when we're done with that, if we want to recombobulate them in some of the other ways that we presented at the last workshop. So from my point of view, the stuff that needs to happen is going to be happening, and we'll hear more about that this afternoon when we talk about the three-year plan.
Dr. Mullen?
And I would agree. I think what we were really concerned about at the point people in these were silos, and we wanted to make sure they got married. And we didn't want to operate independently of each other. We had a link, but we wanted to make sure that link was there. So we wanted to proceed to still to share regional planning. Some of these items will be addressed. There is no deadline to address them. We want to make sure that we do it in the full scope of our planning what's being asked for us by the state. So I think we're spot on to move January integrated into our regional planning. If it doesn't get addressed at that point, then we can go back and scoop it up and address it.
So how does the board feel about that?
Well, again, I'm not trying to belabor the point. I just want to be clear from my point of view. Do we have concerns that we're not? Because I don't. When it comes to deadlines, I don't know if I agree that we don't have deadlines. I think we do. I just want to make sure we're on track. And if what you're saying is, don't worry, we're on track, we're on schedule, that's really all I need to know. I don't necessarily need to know all the details. When groups are getting together and so forth.
From our point of view, I don't have the bigger picture that Lanky would be able to provide you in terms of deadlines. I know the budget stuff, you know, Grace is going to handle, but the primary deadline in my head this year is we have to write a three-year annual plan, and it's due, you know, early June. So, and that's moving.
Okay.
And our goal for that is to have that really wrapped up and solid by mid-March, because then we have to vet it, or at least in my district, I have to vet it, because part of this community college shared governance process is, you know, I wrap this plan up, and then I do my own roadshow at that point to get buy-in and build capacity to support it. So we are on target, and the things that we were discussed last week, those are self-imposed deadlines. But we're still on target to meet where we need to go.
Okay. That's great. And I just want to make sure that we do have adequate time to do the staff engagement piece with teachers, with staff, with the folks that are actually going to be charged with implementing the plan at the classroom level, at Ms. Blanco and others, that we are engaging those folks early in the process and not sort of after the fact. That's what I'm saying.
And they'll be engaged through the same process that we did the last time, which was the action planning team. And some of those action planning teams did spin off and become subject matter expert groups. So that was an outcome that happened, that we'll use the same process this time as creating the action planning team process, where we call for stakeholder engagement across all of our districts, across all stakeholders. Because we know that's important for the plan. And we have to have it, and we want that.
And at the office, we're going to continue to move forward on the marketing plan, which primarily is student, teacher, and administrator engagement. So we'll keep working on that.
Thank you.
And we'll continue to provide updates in this process, because And you'll be involved in it in different levels as well, but we also want to make sure that you're hearing all the parts, right? Because we want to make sure you have the full picture.
So I want to make sure we're all here. No meeting on December 7th. We're then going to have that workshop occur in January and deal with governance and a distribution formula of some type, maybe discussion then and wedding that together. Did I synthesize that correctly?
Yeah, the request from the PPC was that we have the funding research meeting after we figure out the roles and responsibilities.
So I think, if I don't hear otherwise, this is not an action item, so it should be like we're consenting and basically agreeing with the point persons. Dr. Miller?
Yes, I agree. The one thing I'm mulling over, I wasn't going to say anything, but you hand me the mic, so I guess I will. So we've got 19-20 budget coming up, and the allocation of funding to the five districts is obviously a question. So in relation to Mr. Stark's question, as we kick that discussion a little further down the road, will that impact the 19-20 allocations?
Right. So, I don't know, a few months ago, we, as a board, we really marked this funding issue as an urgent matter.
Right.
And now I'm kind of hearing, well, it's not really urgent. So to me it is. At least whether, I'm not saying we solve it all in one session, but I guess I'm not clear on, a few months ago we all agreed this was an urgent issue that we needed to at least start dialogue about, mm-hmm. and we scheduled December 7th, and now it seems it's not urgent. So I guess from my position, I haven't changed my feeling on it. I think we should be on the 7th. And at least, you know, whether we do a facilitated discussion, I don't know if that's necessary, but certainly I feel comfortable enough with my colleagues to begin engaging in that work because, as Dr. Miller pointed out, I mean, you know, I know in LAUSD, we're right in budget development for 1920, believe it or not. And so if there are going to be any decisions, reallocations, as Dr. Miller suggested, potentially, we need to know about those sooner rather than later. So I guess from LAUSD's point of view, I would be in favor of keeping the December 7th date as originally scheduled. But again, you know, I'm just one member.
And I would second that. I think we have to begin to have the conversation, and the sooner we begin the dialogue, the better. And maybe facilitated by Gayla's group. I don't know. You know, we're good about mission creep or scope creep real quick out of the gate, but at least at our board meeting it was approved, so you're good to go. But maybe we start with Gayla, if she's willing to do it, if the point persons agree. At least we've got somebody here to start the conversation. Unless we as a group feel that we don't need it initially and we can have the dialogue ourselves. And I'm open either way,
yeah,
frankly.
I mean, my initial reaction would be, you know, to, as we talked about a little earlier, let's start the conversation.
Okay.
And then if we feel that, you know, we start getting into some thorny areas and, yeah, we had some of that last cycle. Then that's fine. Happy to, you know, look at having a facilitator if we feel it's necessary. But I guess from my point of view, I'm quite comfortable at least beginning that conversation and sort of seeing where it goes.
But just to be clear, Michelle and I have been doing that work and we really feel comfortable presenting on that day.
Okay. I think that's
as requested, come up with some
different
questions. Alice, do you have any comment?
Actually, I'm just listening, but basically, and this is just from again, I have to just address it since I'm new to the group, is that what I see with the point person team is that they're doing a heck of a job. Not only that, I really feel that we have to roll up our sleeves and get something done, have a plan. And I believe the governance and roles and responsibilities have to be set prior to having that discussion on the budget. That's just my opinion. I believe we do need a facilitator because looking at past notes and past agendas for the past 2-3 years, we say we're going to do something and then we kind of stall out. It's always by the holidays. That's just a pattern I'm seeing, and that's what I'm observing. I might be wrong, correct me if I am, but we have to set the governance controls and responsibilities before we go into the budget. That's just my opinion.
Dr. Miller.
So, with true respect, I just have to say that I think we have gotten a lot done in the last 3 years. I think that presentations that we've seen would indicate that we are actually a more functioning unit than we thought we were in relation to our peers up and down the state. At least in our district, I see our adult ed enrollments and adult ed programs growing and picking up traction. So, I think we are, from a fiduciary point of view and from a service delivery point of view, I think we're making good progress, as evidenced by a presentation that we saw today and that we've seen. And I also believe, at least for the moment, that the governance structure we have does work. It may be a little more cumbersome than it needs to be. It may be a little more formal than it needs to be in relation to our peers, based upon the presentations we saw last week. But it is a pretty solid governance structure tied to Brown Act and all of those things. Is it nimble enough, flexible enough? That's something we can talk about. But it is working and it is functioning. The budget discussion is one that is important to all of us. We want to make sure that each of us is being supported in the manner we do based upon the results of the programs that we are providing. And I don't know if we need to wait until there's a whole new review of our governance structure before we start talking about budget allocation. So that's, you know, those are my thoughts and my comments on the topic. I don't know how the rest of you feel about that.
Well, I feel like we've opened up a little bit of a can of worms here. So I want to clarify. On the 7th, the original agenda for the 7th was to discuss governance in a workshop format?
Yes, and you requested of staff to come up with several different funding scenarios for you guys to look at,
right,
and talk about. As a starting point for the conversation.
Funding, not governance.
Funding, not governance.
Funding specifically, yes.
So I want to go back. I'm a little slow here. Was there going to be any conversation on the 7th regarding governance or any presentation on your part? Justin's shaking his head no. So it's only on the 7th to start the conversation about funding research, what other consortia are doing regarding distribution of funds. Is that correct?
We can share with you what we found other people doing. The initial request was for us to present for you some scenario of different possible funding formulas. So
I think what I want to kind of call out here is that the board prioritized what the major topics were and when we wanted to address those. If we want to change that, you know, that needs to be a whole other discussion. But it wouldn't be, I mean, I don't think it's up to the point people or staff to sort of tell the board, obviously, what we're presenting or what when. Or, you know, that was our job, and we did weigh in on that a few months ago. And so, again, if folks feel we need to change it, I would agree. That would kind of be a bit of a can of worms at this point. So I guess I would agree with my colleague, Dr. Miller, that I think we should proceed as scheduled on the 7th and see where it goes. And if we need to do a deeper dive or bring a facilitator or whatever, you know, based on that, how it goes in that meeting, then we can proceed, you know, as necessary. But I would be in favor of keeping the original schedule on the topic as we agreed to previously.
So I believe that's what I'm hearing as a consensus. If somebody disagrees, they need to say so now. But it would be to keep our plan as we had for December 7th and to not make any modifications on the agenda for that meeting. Is that correct, colleagues?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
all right. Do you have anything further that you want to present on?
Was that meeting 1 o'clock or 1:30 or what time was it?
Thank you. They were decided on 1:30 to 4:30.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, and Mr. Gorns is going to present now. Okay.
This is just a brief overview of what's going on. This is more of an adjunct to the information that Mom's going to present in regards to the conference. It's just to let you know that the for the Larry website, the there's a link on the main page for the conference, the main page, as our webmaster calls it, the big button page, with all the links to call for presenters, for call for exhibitors, the venue directions, conference map, contact information is all live and hot and ready to go. As you've already been informed, December 7th is the deadline for call for presenters, February 8th for exhibitors.
You know, this is, again, I hope I don't open up another can, and that is, Do we have a Twitter account?
We do not.
We do not. Okay. All right. Anything further, sir? Okay. Thank you. All right. At this point in time, we're going to call Grace Ocampo. She's the LARIC budget analyst who will provide budget updates and deadlines. Ms. Ocampo?
Good afternoon. I will be presenting the upcoming deadlines and as well as some updates pertaining to the 17th report and capital outlay. So on this screen we have the upcoming deadlines for the Adult Ed Program Funds and Data and Accountability Funds. We had just completed the November 30th deadline. The consortium has already certified the fiscal year 2019 program year budget and work plans for each district. The fiscal 19 Q1 report covering the period of July 1st to September 30, 2018 is due on December 1st, and this will have to be certified by the consortium by the 30th. We are requesting each member district to submit the reports on time because we're working on a set timeline due to the holidays. So we would like to submit the report before we go on with the break. And then with the extension of the Data and Accountability Fund, the expense report covering the period of June 1st, 2016 to September 30, 2018 is due on December 3rd. So the state has conducted a webinar last November 7th. And they had issued also program area reporting instructions on the 17-18 data report requirement that basically stems from the 18-19 budget bill. So based on that budget bill, they are requiring us to submit arc of instruction by program area and operation cost by program area. The period covered here is from July 1st, 2017 to June 30, 2018. And then the program areas covered will be the seven AEC areas, namely ABE, ASE, ESL, EL Civics, Adults with Disabilities, K-12 Success, Short-Term CTE, Workforce Reentry, and Pre-Apprenticeship. In addition, the 18-19 Budget Act requirement allows the AEC office to have an external entity involved in drafting a summary report explaining the data submitted, in addition to any caveats that members may have had in submitting their data. Failure to comply with this requirement or the deliverable deadlines may cause the withholding of apportionment until requirements are met. Due to the nuances of the K-12 and community colleges system, AEP members are expected to enter into NOVA their best estimate given the information or data from their local and state level systems. The state office encourages us to grow rates when necessary If funding sources or programs overlap and or are too difficult to separate. Next slide, please. So this is the first part of the report, would be the reporting on the arc of instruction. The state defines arc of instruction as any reportable individual that has at least 1 hour of program-related services or instruction in our system. The amount of hours would be the total for the program year by each AEC area. To calculate an arc of instruction, please follow your agency accounting and fiscal policies that are used to report hours into your attendance system and the state-approved system. For community colleges, this would include the reporting of contract hours of approved curriculum through the official attendance reporting process. And listed on this slide are the suggested sources. So K-12 members can use their TOPS Pro or their local attendance system. According to the state, for TOPS Pro, CASAS will be providing the data as early as November 5th. And for local, if you're using your local attendance system, just make sure that the system is collecting all student services and instruction and displays the hours with the 7 program areas. For TTDs, they may use your 17-18 apportionment attendance report generated from the CCFS 320 reporting system for non-credit FTEs. Please note that the 320 report does not generate the instructional hours. Thus, hours will have to be calculated by multiplying the FTEs by 525 hours. The CTEs will also need to develop a method of dividing the lump sum of hours into the various AEP program areas, as the 320 report does not separate data or FTEs by program area. Next slide, please. The second piece of the report would be reporting on the operational costs. The state defines operational costs as the true cost of running the AEP program, and this would include the cost of space, utilities, overhead equipment, and other day-to-day operational expenses, such as your instructional or classified salaries, benefits, supplies, etc. It would also include admin costs, which would include administrators who oversee all areas of adult ed or non-credit programs. In some districts, some of these costs may be difficult to separate or identify. And thus, the state is recommending or encouraging us to prorate if necessary. Not only will we enter the true cost of running AEP programs, we will also enter into NOAA the various fund sources that contributed to the operational cost. Along with the AEP fund, NOAA lists the 6 fund sources mandated by EB 104 at Code 84916, Sections A to F. So that would include jail fund, WIOA Title II, Perkins, LPFF, non-credit apportionment, and Howard. In addition, there would also be like a drop-down menu to select the other fund sources. So you can report there, like if you're receiving BO01, Strong Workforce, Student Support, Grants, In-Kind, Donations, Any Student Fees, Grants, Contract for Services, etc. The funds reported as leverage or expense cannot exceed the amount of funds available by that fund source in the 17-18 program year. So this report, there are 2 types of reports, estimates and actuals. The state will be is requiring us to submit the data by February 15 in NOAA. That would be for the estimates and actuals. Thus, the reports will have to be due to the LARIC office by February 1st. And then for 18-19 data, the estimated report is on September, and probably it's going to coincide with a Q1 report. And then we are required to submit the actuals around December. So we will keep you posted as we get the exact details from the state. So if you go and know what this is, how the report will look like. So there's the program area reporting by the different where you have to report the hours of instruction by program area. And then the second piece to it would be on the next slide, which would be the leverage fund, wherein we will report the operational costs. And on the next slide, and also on your packets, are the templates that will be used for this reporting. So in reviewing the fiscal year 2019 budget, we noticed that we have member districts have submitted capital expenditures, but so far there's only one district that had presented that to LARIC. Last July, the LARIC office sent the AEP office a request for capital outlay approval, and the state's response is on this slide. So according to the state doesn't approve this request, but we do ask you send us an informational email in case we have questions. If you have run this capital improvements by your consortium members, and they are in agreement, and they are solely for the benefit of the adult ed 7 program areas, then I would save the minutes of that meeting and make sure you post this in your 18-19 budget and work plan. As this connects to the 18-19 annual plan strategy, if those things are completed, then we can move forward. So, in LARIC's point of view, member districts who have submitted capital outlay budgets must come to the board to have those approved. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Ocampo, as usual, for your presentation. Very comprehensive and helpful. One question I have, so considering the conversation we're going to be having next month, getting into some questions and discussions about funding, obviously we're waiting for the governor's budget in January. We're going to have, hopefully more clarity then in terms of what we're looking at for 1920. Is there anything from the state so far in respect to adult ed program in terms of any clues, indications that we'll be looking at the same amount of funding, more or less? Have we gotten any information at all from the state at this point?
I haven't seen anything.
Any other questions for Ms. Ocampo?
Thus far, has everybody been fairly prompt with their reporting?
Not really.
Not really?
Yeah.
Without calling anybody out right now, but if there's anything that the board chair or vice chair can do to help facilitate that, maybe you can let them know, let staff know.
Okay.
It is one of our responsibilities, so we really need to make sure it gets done in a timely fashion. It's okay, don't worry about it now, but apparently it's a topic that should be discussed, is what I'm gathering.
Just from my experience, I have to track down member districts sometimes when it comes to reporting. And because I have to control these reports, and it takes also time and to get also the certification. So we're just asking for everybody's cooperation.
Okay. It can be discussed further. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, at this time, we'll introduce Mon Lay, who will provide the LARIC conference update.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm so excited to be sharing with you the Larry Conference update. So basically, this year's Larry Conference, you can see the graphic. It is awesome. I'm really excited about the graphic, and there's more. We're going to be doing a few more, you know, just putting in a few more things to it, but we're pretty happy with it. So basically, this year's work, when we gathered together as a committee, the conference committee, we decided we need to address the issues. Last year, the conference was great, but obviously there's always issues that we can improve upon. And the three issues that really was glaring for us was scheduling the keynote speaker. Last year we scheduled very much time. The sound system was not as effective or as great. And also the coffee. We kind of ran out of coffee. It was a big deal, especially for teachers. And so this year, what we decided to do in order to address that is that for the keynote speaker, instead of having it during lunchtime when the clatter of the plates and the forks and the talking, everybody's so excited to see each other again, they want to relax and talk to their friends, you know, the keynote speaker was incredible, but it was hard for him to get everybody's attention. So we made sure, hey, you know what, let's make sure we have it in the morning when everybody is at their prime. And they want to be sitting there and listening respectfully. And so this year, the keynote speaker is scheduled for the morning. That's exciting. For the keynote speaker, especially. And the sound system, we spoke of the sound system. We're going to still use the same guy. We apologize to you, but you didn't give us a discount last year. And this year, we are going to provide more speakers. Somehow the owner was out of town, so this year, I will be there, I promise. And we used him for the first year, he was excellent. He was out of town last year, he was not excellent. And this year, he promised an excellent experience. And the third thing is that coffee. We will have coffee, period. And that's it. Any questions?
So, your enthusiasm is infectious, I will say that.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, who came up with this? I really like this. I'm a pizzazz kind of person in terms of marketing. I like the Larry experience. So, is it fair to ask you to share how this came up?
So, are you asking about the theme itself, like the Larry experience, or are you talking about the graph, or are you asking about the graphics?
Both,
okay. So the learning experience, we decided as a committee to come up with different themes, and from there we voted upon the theme. So the learning experience supersedes everything else, and then we decided to motivate, integrate, there's a lot of jokes. Okay, Germany. No, we decided to include that as a part of that, so there's a pizzazz to it. And the Larry Conference, the graphics itself, we tried the first one, that there was the first iteration, and that, you know, it didn't speak to our theme, to what it is that we wanted to talk about. So we decided, you know what, our graphic artist, she's amazing. She's been doing this for over 30 years. And, you know, we were tasked because we decided to volunteer for certain things. We are not experts in everything. And so, therefore, we'll give her an opportunity to decide for herself to select the graphic. And she did, and we were so thrilled because it's simply beautiful. The first one was, yeah. The second one, wow. And the beauty is that because our conference is making, we are able to communicate each other so well, that we're able to just say, hey, you know what? It's better. It's good that we disagree because then we can come up with a better version. And this is the version that we came up with.
I love your enthusiasm. I love this version. I'm glad you did not add frustrate up there. That would not be good. But all of those, I heard you say something about germinate. I don't know if that would be legal, but I like those three, and I think that pretty much summarizes what the Larry experience is all about.
I'm a Jimi Hendrix fan, so I love it.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you. Okay, any other questions?
I don't believe there are any, and I want to thank you very much for sharing the wonderful update with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I just want to say, Ma had 6 cups of coffee today. All right. I know, right about the end of it a little bit. As you may remember, as a part of our professional development framework, we had agreed that we were going to send a survey to our member districts to check in with them and find out, prioritize, say, items of interest to them. whether it was day, time, topic. So I'm here basically just to give you kind of initial feedback on what that looks like. There's still a couple more weeks for them to report back, but we just wanted to get you a little bit of information, a little taste of what's where we're at right now. Can we get the next slide, please? No, it's not. Michelle, is it Hannah? Oh, I didn't even make the PowerPoint. Apparently it is a handout, so that will be. Yeah, thanks. Okay. If you look at page. Now here it is. This is going to be the agenda. Let me see it right here.
Yep.
Somebody made a PowerPoint, please. So basically, I'll just run you through this. It's pretty basic stuff. So, of the questions that we ask them, like what type of training are you interested in, what day, what time, are you interested in participating in webinars? So basically, as of right now, in terms of trainings, number one is ESL best practices, number two, CTE best practices, three, blended learning, four, PLC, and five, HISET best practices. Day, as you might surmise, the number one choice is Friday. Time, as you also might surmise, is afternoon on Friday. And an overwhelming number of percentage of respondents are really interested in webinars. But again, we'll report back to you final numbers after the reporting deadline ends so that you can take a look at what the final numbers are.
So I noticed I didn't see IET best practices on there. I would love to, I don't know, that's my vote. Is there a way we can maybe sneak that one in? I think that would be great.
Sure, we'll see what we can do. And just as an aside, one of the things that we're looking closely at as part of the conference is doing IET-related topics. We were just discussing right now about having some chapters like, what? Wait, what? Because
yeah, I think IET was on the initial draft, so that's what I did.
Okay.
This is not the survey. Here's the result. I did the result.
Yeah,
the survey
about the choice. Yeah, it is. I think it would suggest it's not there as a choice, but it is. This is just the top five. And again, preliminary results. And just to finish the point, we are, the suggestion in the when we were at a point person teams meeting was to really have IET represented at the conference, and it will be. Any questions about the?
So this here on the bottom has, you've got 129 responses from the consortium.
Yes.
That's kind of pathetic, isn't it? And this is as of the 8th of November. Is this open till when, or is it closed?
Two more weeks.
And just because it's a survey doesn't mean we can't add more things to it if we want to, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, except that it would throw things off for those that have already completed the survey.
Right, but what I'm saying is that, for example, IET, let's say it only gets to number 7 with a bullet instead of the top 5, but we still think it's an important thing to include.
Couldn't we include IET either in ESL or CTE?
Sure.
Yeah. So I mean I think it's a given that it's all the talk and the rage right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That would be appropriate to consider that either area or others.
No. All right. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, Dr. Mullen?
Please remember as well that this is only one part of what we're looking at in informing what we offer in professional development. We're also looking at the WIOA 2 professional development plan that faculty also completed a survey on as well to inform what we offer as well.
All right, thank you. Yes, Mr. Garrillas.
Yes, also at about the PLC, we got the ball rolling on that. We have,
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the end of that.
Oh, the PLC, we got the ball rolling on the PLC, and we have dates. So I don't know if you can share those or other than okay.
Was there another comment? No? All right. Okay, well, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate all your work on this. And we'll now ask for Elvis Carrillas and Yanira Chavez to provide an update on the first data and accountability work group meeting.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yeah, you guys here because I have a separation anxiety. So we met, we had our first meeting November 7th. We had Burbank attend, Culver City, LACTV, and Montebello for this first meeting. We had a nice group. Everyone was willing to share, so the, it was kind of fair to do something, I think, at some point, somebody said something around those lines. But we spoke about the objectives, the purpose, and the goal of the workroom. We looked at some pros and cons. We didn't really call it cons. We referred to them as challenges of collecting data. So I'll give you some examples of the pros. We agreed that we could use the data as a measuring stick to inform program decision making and create tools to show consortium goal achievements. Some of the challenges were the lack of accurate data, clear guidance, data alignment, lack of training and cooperation, and data duplication. So I think we're all sort of on the same page. Everyone has saw data in the same way in terms of the positives, and we all had a lot of similar challenges as well. So this sort of led to a discussion regarding gaps. So what is it that we need to report? Where do we need to report? And how do we create these metrics? So at the next meeting, the first thing we're going to do is tackle the data alignment portion of it. So the data definition, and that's what we're doing.
You just, like Elvis said, we have a very active group, and we're looking forward to share the data. Our next meeting is going to be December 6th, and we're planning to meet right after our title team meeting in the morning, so that team is going to be ready for us to provide data to our group. So, happy to be part of the group.
Great, thank you. One quick question. Is there a chair of the group, kind of leader of the group?
Right here, co-chair.
Okay. I want to make sure, and Ms. Lee, you can ensure we have an LUSD representative in the next meeting. It's like we were absent at the last meeting.
Okay,
so
that was my fault.
Okay.
We had a couple of, I would say, three chairs, and so the email we missed that.
Okay.
My apologies for that.
So, Ms. Lee, do we have a designee from LUSD on that committee?
We have the visa for it.
Oh, we do? Okay.
We have the email.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Apparently we need more copies.
And we'll identify more participants.
Okay.
I have a question. No. Probably. And I guess this is a question actually for the board, too. So part of the data and accountability group, I think, requested that Michelle be a part of it because she still does some things at Culver City. Although I thought she should be there just as part of Larry's office. But my understanding is that the hours were asked to be made up. And I'm just not sure that should be the thing about her making up the hours to participate in a group that really is for all of Larry's. So I don't even know. I just know that's what happened. She was asked by Lampy to readjust her hours and work them separately in order for her to attend the data and accountability work group meeting.
Right. I get that. I just don't think that this is the place to address that. I wonder if that would be best addressed as a personnel matter and an issue regarding employee time that we can discuss with Mr. Estudias when he gets back from Africa.
I know it just came up recently, so I'm not sure exactly where that is. Okay, thanks.
Is that why you weren't happy? I agree.
I do want to say, yes, Michelle has been an asset for less than a part of the group.
You know, and I want to say this because you probably don't hear it enough, if at all, and that is that you both, and actually the two ladies at the table there, you have full-time jobs, and you have work that needs to be done. And on top of that, you are serving as point persons with task after task after task that is added to your plate, and just want you to know that we're very, very appreciative, and we could not be where we are today without the hard work of you as point person. So please do not think that any of that is not acknowledged, and we very much appreciate what you do.
Amen.
All right, so we are now at information items. And the first on the list here is I'm going to introduce Alice Huckes, who will provide the Montebello Unified School District quarterly report. Correct, with a C. It's right on my notes.
Thank you. There is a board member. Yeah. I was tasked with the reporting of the quarterly report. The date, the months are April through August. That's what I was asked to present on. And here I go. Okay. The metrics, Montebello Unified School District and MCAS, which is Montebello Community Adult Schools, we are working furiously with efforts to ensure effectiveness of services. The enrollment and attendance data was determined by the Montebello Unified School District as Board Policy 6208, and that was back in October of 2017. Expenditures consistent with regional consortium plan goals, and all activities were aligned with regional consortium plan goals. MUSD and Montebello Community Adult Schools' efforts to ensure effectiveness of services. We have ongoing and consistent communication, which has been occurring with the superintendent, classified, sophisticated human resources, our finance department, and to ensure that all Montebello Community Adult School sites are appropriately staffed and are operating efficiently and adhering to the recommendations from state and FICMAT audit. Just in case, we currently have 4 main campuses and 21 outlying sites. Updates on progress were shared with Montebello Unified School Board of Education in August, September, and last night. Montebello Community Adult Administrative Team, that makes up with Mr. Phil Tenorio, is on the south side, which is Phil Tenorio is at Forest Park, and I'm at Montebello Adults, overseeing the overall program. We also have Esther O'Malley and Kathy Davis. We meet frequently, in fact, since August 3rd, we've been meeting on a weekly basis to ensure our vision and goals and procedures are in place and are followed by employees. That's the task in its own. We've been doing standing meetings, Friday meetings, and weekly meetings with staff and certificated teachers. Montebello Community Adult School administrative staff and fiscal management team have been realigned. So enrollment and attendance data as determined by Montebello Unified School District, April 23rd, 2018 to August 1st, 2018. We are using the AFAP system. We reported unduplicated students, which served 6,195. Duplicated students served 11,895. We have continued training and classified certificated staff on ASAP along with other policies and procedures.
We have ongoing marketing efforts to improve awareness and attendance. We're on Twitter and Instagram as well as Facebook. The next page was provided by the previous administrator that was in charge of budget. So these are expenditures consistent with the RCC goals for that particular time period, April 2018 through August 2018. The activities that during this period of time, we had new courses implementations. And this is the update. The EKG was at a class that was opened up at Ford Park. It was opened February of that of 2018. However, the attendance was low, so we did have to close the class. Pharmacy technician, we are still at about 10 students, and we are still continuing to market it and to do some classroom observations. But we did attain four community partners. Mm-hmm. Building construction trade opened up March of 2018, and they are housed at an intermediate school. And that particular class would have to be open from 4 to 9. We have after school programs at that site. So we have a challenge between the hours of 4 to 6. So we are regrouping and trying to relocate that particular class. So we have to close it October of this year. Adults with Disabilities is going strong. We have a culinary food services at Bell Gardens Adults. From 8 to 2, and we have the Sure Adult at that time, Sure Adult School. It got so big that we actually are using now our Farmer Jones Transition Services Center, and we remodeled the whole entire facility, and it's actually a house where they learn life skills. We partnered with all the after school site providers, such as All Stars, ISES, they don't have to say ISIS for some reason. we have Creative Brain and also SSI. And we actually have it mandated. It's been on the board policy that all staff, instructional aides, will be taking this course in the evening and be certified after 60 hours. So that has been growing and successful. And that began March of 2018. Our high school graduation ceremony was attended by 117 graduates back on June 1st of last year, 2018, I'm sorry. Competitive and Integrative Employment Advisory, we are, with all the adult schools, are part of this partnership between the Department of Rehab, Regional Center, and other outside agencies. We had the College and Career Expo at Ford Park last May. And we also launched and redesigned all of our logos, our website, and social media. Do you have any questions?
Just a question. Thank you for the presentation. I appreciate that. I think a presentation like this, in my view, would probably benefit from some context. And I guess so. I guess if I'm sitting in the audience, I'm kind of wondering, well, would these be things that all the districts are supposed to be reporting on? I mean, why is it just Montemello, right? So I know there's some actions we took, you know, a while back as a board around this issue of sort of transparency, accountability, right, for the resources that we have. And so I know that we are going to be working with a third-party firm, right, who's going to be sort of working with all the districts and LARIC to really validate whatever data, you know, we're submitting in terms of expenditures and all these kind of things. So I'm wondering, because, you know, essentially this is self-reported, what the presentation we got today, which is fine. I'm just wondering, though, in the context of the direction we're moving with, you know, having a third-party firm kind of validate a lot of, you know, the data that you mentioned, I guess this is more of a question to the board. Do we feel we want to hold off on future presentations until we actually implement this new accountability system, this layer that we want to sort of implement to sort of hold Larry accountable, so to speak. Does that make sense? Because I need to have some context in terms of moving forward. I mean, is this something we all should be presenting at some point? Or, you know, again, because we're just sort of putting forward sort of self-reported information and data. You know, again, we've had some really long discussions about that. And it seems like we're moving more toward the direction of having a third party involved. So I just wanted to hear from some of the board members, maybe some of your perspectives on that.
So, first of all, I think if we are going to do reports, they have to be based upon a common set of metrics that we all report on. So whatever it is that we believe is the information across the board that should be reported is what we should be responding to. Secondly, I think we need to report on whatever it is that correlates with the reports that we are supposed to be submitting to the state or to the AEP office folks. I am curious, and I'm not even sure what ours is, but I noticed in the budget that you've got 15, which seems to be 15% of your budget is tied for indirect, and I don't really know what indirect is. It's a pretty big number. I don't even know if I have the right to ask that question, frankly, because it might be internal to how you support your programs. I appreciate your sharing that information. But if we're going to share information like that, we should be consistent across the board. All this said, I think we have gone to the effort of hiring auditors to audit our programs and reviews, which again shows strength from a fiduciary and a governance perspective. That I'm not sure many of our colleagues up in the state have done the same thing. And maybe what we do is we look at their standards, whatever it is they're going to be looking at us, and maybe we report out in that manner. So I agree. I'm not sure what we're trying to accomplish here.
And let me just say further, I just want to kind of say it, just come out there and say it. I mean, so one of the findings that came forward to our attention was that from the state's point of view, they felt like LARIC had some responsibility to sort of in some ways oversee or maybe in some ways hold individual districts in LARIC Montebello accountable for whatever issues were going on in terms of, you know, whatever fiscal or otherwise. And so we've been responding to that. We've been looking at how can we set up systems to hold all our districts accountable and so forth so that we can all feel confident that the information that's being reported is in fact validated versus self-reported or self-validated. So I guess my concern is, you know, if information is being presented to this board, I mean, are we agreeing? Are we being asked to agree with it? Are we being asked to... That's what I'm not clear on. And so I guess I would just want to make sure we're clear on exactly the fact that this is a presentation, that we're not, at least from LAUSD's point of view, we're not certifying or validating any of this. And if in fact, you know, we're again moving toward, as Dr. Miller said, more of a, hey, we're going to set, we're all going to be essentially presenting this stuff more or less, either through LARIC or individually, in terms of a set of common metrics, I would be in favor of that as well.
Can I ask a question? My understanding is that Montebello was required to present. Were you given parameters for what information to present? Because that was...
Well, on October 30th, scheduled an emergency meeting because he suggested that we present today's meeting. I asked if we could hold off and that we could discuss it in our meeting December 7th, but he said he'd prefer us because we were supposed to present in August, that we're late. But then I wasn't board approved until after August. So what Landy told us is basically this is the point that you want to come across. I asked them, do you want us to put in a slide about our budget during those particular months? And he told us, I want you to report on April 2018 to August 2018. And so that's what we did. That was the plan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question because, again, going back to context, so that's where I think it's important to maybe in the future let's attach something to this that gives, you know, folks who are in the audience who may not have any context, and even maybe some of us on the board, to remind us of maybe decisions that we had made previously, you know, again, to, I think, in the interest of transparency and accountability and so forth, which is all great. Again, I believe there was an action that we took as a board to have Montebello come forward and present some of these things. So, I think we can go back in the previous agendas or minutes and verify that. All I'm saying is, moving forward, as a board, what is our purpose in having Ms. Jaquez present, in terms of sort of like, and what, so if she's presenting informational items, what are we as a board doing about it? Does that make sense? I just want to be clear on what the purpose is moving forward. I understand, you know, in the past, we took action to say, okay, you know, there should be these quarterly presentations, we got to cover X, Y, Z. You know, it wasn't, you know, Mr. Studius. I mean, he was just basically passing that on. He wasn't saying, you know, I want you to present this and sort of going on his own. It was based on whatever we decided as a board. So I guess, again, getting late in the afternoon and rambling on, all I'm trying to say is, moving forward, what is our purpose in having Montebello, you can't present this type of data and information, and do we want to really couch it and, or sort of look at it differently in terms of having it maybe be presented from our third-party auditor at some point, in which case it's more of a LARIC presentation versus, you know, looking at any one particular district. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Well, you do make sense. I want to look at some things chronologically. So, what Ms. Hopkins is doing is complying with what our response was as a consortium to the auditor, and that was in the reply that we submitted, and that the auditors said okay. This because one of the issues was the oversight for the consortium, and I'm not going to get into the conversations that we had prior to that. But this consortium does have a responsibility, and so Alice is complying with that. And there was also a timeline in place, which is what Mr. Estudios, I'm sure, was concerned about. And thank you for sharing the process for you to get board approved. Look, I want to be real here. I know this is not comfortable, and it is not easy, and also you have stepped up to the plate, Ms. Hawkins, in terms of leadership for your district, and honestly, I appreciate that, and I know that your district does too. So this is why we are kind of tardy with this report, which needed to occur quarterly, and here we're getting it in November. I do believe, because that is something that we've discussed as a result of that audit, that all of us should also produce these types of reports. And now that we have an auditing firm, I do believe that will happen. But for the time being, I think we need to comply and have these reports from Montebello in place. From what I recall from the auditor, there's no certification on our part. It's strictly that would be demonstration on our part of oversight that you're presenting that it's agendized and you're presenting that report to us.
Right.
Okay. So I do have a couple of questions for you. And again, they're strictly questions. I don't do gotchas. And that is, your data of unduplicated and duplicated students, is that data gathered from the ASAP system that you've implemented?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's good. And then the other question that I have is something that Dr. Miller brought up, and it really isn't private. It's how are the indirect costs determined? Is that your district has negotiated indirect cost amount? How is that determined? Because it appears to be 15%.
Correct. And that's what I was instructed by the council for this particular report, that it was 15% for administration.
And just for point of reference, LACCD is 5%. I'm not sure what.
So, Miss Ocampo has her hand up. And it's a little awkward here. This is almost like a board workshop, to be honest with you, the way we're doing it. But, Miss Ocampo, I believe you have something to offer. Can you please come up to the mic?
Yeah.
She can come up.
So, prior years up to 2017-18, they may use their approved indirect cost rate, which I believe was beyond 5%. And the reason probably that you're seeing a high indirect cost there is because of the period recovery. It's from April through August. Mm-hmm. And most likely they charge their indirect cost towards the end of the year.
So I want to be clear, and I'm not playing the game here. Trust me, I got a lot of numbers in my head. The new stipulation is that it could not exceed 5%. Am I correct?
18-19
budget.
18-19, it would be the approved indirect cost rate or 5%, whichever is less.
But the 18 fiscal year begins July 1. Okay, so then, I just want to make sure that my tone is right. I'm just asking questions as a board member, okay? You're covering the period, Ms. Hakis, of April 2018 through August of 2018. So we're actually overlapping fiscal years here. Is there any way... I don't know if I have the authority to do this, but I'm just going to ask it anyway, and Joe can correct me, or Dr. Miller, or Ms. Okay, Montes. And that is, can you please let us know if you currently are adhering for this fiscal year to the 5% indirect cost fee?
I know that for a fact we are. We had a meeting October... I have it written down in my notes. October 20th, I want to say we're with Brady and the fiscal person now, and we are at 5%.
Okay. I have one additional question, and that is because the audit was not, I think sometimes we want to focus in on, and I can be guilty of that too, on numbers, but the audit was actually addressed much more than that. So the question that I want to ask you is, can you share with us, again, within your, I want to say almost comfort zone, how is your district governed now? And how is adult ed, where does adult ed fall in that governance by your district?
Okay, in regards to the Board of Education
and Superintendent.
And
county.
And county. Well, right now we have county that Los Angeles County Office of Education has been in our offices for over 6 months. They will continue to stay in our offices. But what we do is we go through HR, budget control, finance department, the interim assistant superintendent of HR, and the executive board, and we meet twice a month just on proper PRS, personnel control forms, H1, hiring processes, and so forth, so that we are tied to that. In regards to class size, we had to do our first reductions October 15th. And we continue to meet on a bi-monthly basis.
Do you have a county overseer or superintendent in place?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And what is their role in terms of communication with your district leadership?
He is Mark Scarbano, and he actually is the approver of anything that we supply to HR, budget control. He's active in that process as well. He has to oversee all budget controls and everything.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So I guess this is helpful, but I won't call it an issue. I guess my question is, I take the information, it's out of context. I don't really know what to compare and contrast it to. So one thing that comes to mind is whatever the concerns were that were noted by the state, which I think Mr. Irizotti was getting to, is maybe a report to us that's consistent with whatever progress reports you have provided the state in the area of adult education, the concerns that they had. So even if you just shared that report with us, then we would know that Montebello is quote-unquote making progress relative to those things that were noted as concerns by the state auditors or superintendent of public instruction's office or, you know, whoever it was. That would be helpful to me. And then the 15%, I get that. You're really only reporting a quarter here, right? April, May, June, 5 months. So it would be also good maybe to see this. What's the annual budget look like? What is the 5 months in comparison to the annual budget? And are you on budget, off budget? And, you know, it's that kind of information. And then I go back to what Mr. Stark said, which is, what is it that we are really trying to ask of our Montebello colleagues here? I certainly don't. I'm sure our colleagues don't want to ask you to jump through hoops just because. I think we're just trying to have some level of fiduciary responsibility here. So when the state asks us, because you might recall that we were roped into this as well, and if I remember some of that information correctly, they were saying that we were responsible for keeping Montebello on the straight and narrow relative to their expenditures of LIRC dollars. I don't know if I agree with that, but I think that was the implication.
Right. There was some debate about that, but quite frankly, whatever my own personal feelings were about it or ours is not important. It's what the legislation says. I'm just trying to be helpful here. I hope you know that about my sincerity. What I would submit is that something very akin to what Dr. Miller indicated is I would follow what the audit report findings were. I would create a chart and say, here's what the audit report finding was. Here is where we are presently in addressing that. Here's what the audit, because there were many things, they weren't just budget, and they're not here. And it's our responsibility to know where those, because some of those things were HR related, and where you are with that. And I think that would be a clean way to do it, would be to go back to the audit finding and then just create a chart and say, here's what it said, here's where we are, you know, in November 2018, here's the actions we've taken, here's an audit finding, here's the action that we took. And then I think then that would be clear for the board or frankly those in the audience that would have a copy of it to know what progress the district is taking in terms of addressing those audit findings.
And that basically makes us, well, if somebody asks us, we then have done our responsibility, we're compliant, we're tracking what Montebello is doing, and the way we're tracking it is in alignment with the way the state is tracking. So that means that everybody's done the right thing and we're okay.
And again, I recognize the awesome responsibility you have, and I just want you to know that we're very appreciative of the leadership you're providing.
I appreciate all your help as well.
Any other questions or comments?
Okay, I just want to make sure. So, is there direction being provided at this point in terms of
Well,
I empathize with you because I don't think as a board, I mean, you're sort of being asked to make a presentation and you weren't really given clear guidance on what I think you were really supposed to present and what the purpose of it was. I mean, I kind of think it's a little awkward to say the least, and I just think as a board, we need to be very clear if we're going to have, you know, somebody come up from one of the districts and present. I just think we need to be really clear, you know, what is it we're looking for? If there's a particular format it should be in, whatever that is, and let's make sure we all have agreement so that down the road we don't have another situation where you're coming forward and from your perspective you're, you know, presenting something you believe we're asking for, but in fact it turns out it's really not. So I just think as a board we really should be very clear today about what it is we need Ms. Hockley to come prepared with and when.
I agree with you 100%. I think that it's very awkward for the Montebello team, as well as difficult. And I think that this is something that maybe our board chair and Mr. Asturias could meet with Ms. Hockis and talk about the format. I personally think, Ms. Tart, that it should follow the findings from the audit report, because in that case then we would be consistent with the items that they brought forth, and then we have a very clean response back as evidence to them that this was brought forth publicly and that these are the steps and action items that Montebello took to address these issues. That's just off the top of my head how I think it would be cleanly done.
So I would like to make a motion to that effect, that we ask our Montebello colleagues to prepare a report of that type and perhaps bring it back to us at meeting after next, whatever that date is.
January?
At the January meeting, if that would if that works for our Montebello colleagues.
It does, and I would like to make a request that Mon Lee does my report, because he can make anything sound great.
Okay, as long as we have enough coffee. Okay, so there's a motion on the floor.
Do we have a second?
Second.
And any discussion? I believe you're thinking about something, Ms. Montes.
So you said have her meet with me and Lancey and look at the thing, and then it changed to the motion of have her.
Right, I didn't make a motion.
So I want to be clear on, is there anything I need to do?
No.
And the answer is no. So then I'm clear. Good. That was my only clarification.
Okay, Mr. Stark.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly comfortable with that. I'm just wondering, is there any discussion around the metrics? Because, you know, I believe these are supposed to be in response to the findings from the state. In other words, somehow as LARIC, we're supposed to ensure that Montebello and indeed all the districts are effective in delivery of their services, right?
Yes.
What's effective? Right? We're supposed to, okay, verify enrollment and attendance data, okay. Expenditures consistent with regional consortium plan goals. So I think there's a little more, I mean, I guess this is just my take on it, and I could be missing the boat. I think there's a little more to it than coming up with a spreadsheet. I believe, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, because from my recollection, that was sort of what the state was asking us to do, is to somehow ensure that Montebello is doing, you know, in terms of how they're utilizing the funds for adult ed, making sure they're effective, whatever that means, and then making sure it's consistent with regional. So that's the part I'm having trouble with in terms of who's going to verify this, and if it's going to be the third party, then we should wait until that process has been clarified and identified and articulated. So I'm okay with this, as we're proposing, as maybe an interim step, but I think there's still a larger issue here that I just want to make sure we're not dodging a larger issue here. That's all.
So I understand what your comment and perhaps concern is. What I'm just trying to do at the moment is just sort of level set us with whatever the state's requiring. And once we have that piece of information in front of us, then we can delve deeper. And again, I fully expect that whatever we are asking our colleagues from Montebello to be held accountable to, the rest of us will need to be accountable on the same level in terms of equity and fairness and appropriateness. So the only reason we're having this conversation is because Montebello is going through a very rough period right now. And it's our responsibility, because we kind of got roped into this because of our LARIC relationship, to have an extra set of eyes on their adult education program. So I think the way to start with that is, as Mr. Rosate said, which is let's do the comparison side by side, kind of see what Montebello is saying in terms of how they respond to the state, and then we can delve deeper as we see or feel necessary, including with the audit firm that we've hired. We've hired basically two audit firms, one to do the numbers and one to audit our programs. And so all that's going to result in a lot of data, and so I think we're getting to a point where we're going to be able to be much more responsive to any questions that people might send our way with our own districts and outside.
So this is discussion, right? So we have a responsibility to respond to the auditors, which we have, and a part of that is these reports that Montebello brings forth. That's the first task, because I want to separate things here a little bit and deal with them chronologically. And so the difficulty is, as Mr. Stark pointed out, is that the Montebello team has not been given direction, a template, anything like that to direct them on these quarterly reports that have to be done. And so I think what we're trying to do here is address that first and give them, albeit on the fly, some guidance here about creating a chart that could be brought back to a meeting in January addressing those points brought forth in the audit report. That said, as a result of that report, all of our antennas went up, and we recognize the fact that we also now need to step up to the plate and are held accountable for these things, and that's why we have now these two firms that are going to be assisting us with that process. But we can't ignore the fact that and I'm not saying that we want to or are, but we need to address this issue regarding Montebello first, because if the auditors come back and say, what evidence do you have, I don't know that we're necessarily going to be able to produce that.
Right.
And so that's why I think it is important that Montebello come back in January with a report that clearly articulates what the findings from the audit were and what Montebello's actions are to correct those findings. Where we go on from there in terms of an entire consortium, that we can talk about. But I think our initial step was hiring those two firms. Any further discussion? So all those in favor of the motion as presented, signify, Mr. Stark.
Sorry, I just want to make sure before we send you on your way here, because we're about to give you, I guess, a kind of a directive here. Is that clear? I mean, what questions might you have? I just want to make sure before we vote on something, we want to make sure it's clear to to you, who are going to have to be in charge of implementing whatever we decide on.
Okay, with regard to that, I've done two presentations to the board. I did one last night where I discussed the findings and what our actions have been since. We said effective August 30th, effective September 1st. And so I did it line by line. Anything that has to do with adult ed, all of it has to do with adult ed. 11 of those 25 points was for business services and HR that needed to be discussed. I just addressed the part that adult ed has taken action. So I actually have the flash drive. I can make a copy for you tonight, and you guys can look it over. But is that some type of format? But one of the things I do have to address, do you want me to go back a certain year, just that year that the findings are? So it would be addressed in the 2017-2018 fiscal school year?
Correct.
Which
is what's noted in the report. And I think that whatever report you made last night for your own board, it sounds to me like that's exactly what we're talking about here. And I would submit to you, this is why I said earlier that it would be the appropriate role for the chair being here at this meeting to sit down with Mr. Asturias to indicate to him what was discussed here, given he's not here, because then he would be the person to sit down as a staff member with Ms. Hawkins to make sure that what she brings forth in January is exactly what is copacetic with what we're talking about here. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Any other further? So we're ready here. All those in favor of the motion as presented by Dr. Miller, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you very much for that presentation. And now we're going to go something a little lighter here. I don't know about you, but I feel like I need a, feel like Dean Martin. I need a little, anyway. Michelle Field will provide information about a new innovation award.
Since I'm reporting something from the conference committee, I'll bring the conference committee excitement to this one. We were talking about a new idea in our conference committee, and we wanted to share that with you and get your thoughts about it as well. We were all very excited about it. Everyone we talked to talk about it with is very excited as well. And this is the idea of having an innovation award as part of our LARIC conference. That what we wanted to do is to serve a lot of purposes, but we wanted to acknowledge and highlight some of the really great things that we're doing in all of our schools right now. Sometimes there are groups of teachers that are working tirelessly on putting new things into their school site, and then, you know, we don't necessarily get that shared with the greater LARIC community. So we wanted to use this innovation award to acknowledge teachers or groups of teachers that have been innovative in their school sites. For number one, the sharing, number two, acknowledging them, and number three, also branding LARIC, like, you know, also expanding that LARIC brand into the school sites. We looked at different, and we found that innovation awards are actually something that the community college already does, except they attach millions of dollars to the awards, which we decided to
give us millions of dollars, Bob?
Absolutely, everything you need.
And what we wanted to, we're looking at, anybody who works in one of the member districts can either A, nominate themselves in a project they're working on, or they can be nominated by others. We definitely want to have administrators involved in validating that indeed was an innovation that happened, and it did make a huge difference with students there. So you see our drafts in your packet. Oh, let me tell you what that is. It's in agenda item 4.2, it's in your packet. You'll see a draft of the nomination form. And we definitely wanted to allow groups of teachers or groups of faculty or groups of just staff to be able to nominate themselves too, because we do see innovations in counseling practices that are happening in the offices, and sometimes classified staff are also involved in those projects. So we wanted to make sure that was an option. And I know that we have, you know, CCAE and we have Teacher of the Year awards, but those are like once in a lifetime kind of things. And we wanted to create something that you can win more than one time, because it's really just about acknowledging all those great things that we're doing in our schools. So this is our nomination form. The next page over talks about like what they want to, it's our outline for they're going to submit their projects. And what we want to focus on is not, is innovations. Innovations that can be identified, this is what we did specifically, and this is how it can be replicated at another school. That we don't, we know we have lots of great teachers, but we don't want to use this award for acknowledging great teaching. What we want to use it for is great innovations that can be replicated. And our vision for how this will look at the conference is that the acknowledgement of the award can happen during the lunchtime. We can compete with, we'll be very excited. And we can compete with the plates and the forks and all that stuff, unlike the keynote speaker. So we'll put it in there. And then we also want to have a display that there where all the vendors are, where everybody is to see, where it shows. These are all the snapshots of the awards of all the different projects. We will have people who won. We'll also have honorable mentions up there. And then we'll have ways that people can contact those people if they want to find out more information about it. And then the last page on here, there's a third page. What we wanted to do, we talked about this with the conference committee and also with the PPT, and wanted to make sure that we didn't lock ourselves down to each of the awards are about one award in each category. We wanted to really see what we get, especially since it's the first year. So we're just going to be advertising, you know, putting out there that we're going to have innovation awards. We're going to see what kinds of submissions we get, and then we'll create some kind of rubric for which we're going to score these and decide to determine what is the who is the winner. But we put some ideas on here, so we don't have to have these as categories where we're going to have a winner in each one. It's just to give people some ideas of the kinds of innovations we're looking for, and we try to stick with things that are in our plan. Like, we figure if we want these things to turn out in our plan, we got to manage for having those things happen, so we wanted to make sure that we attach this to what we have in our plan. And as we move forward creating our new career plan, we can modify these and add to them as well. Anyway, we're very excited about it.
This is really exciting, and I love the categories. I think it helps kind of turn the head of Larry, so to speak, and kind of guiding us in some areas that maybe we want to call out and celebrate. And I know it's kind of mentioned in the data piece, but I would like there to be some, whether explicit mention or something along the lines of like evidence-based practices. In other words, you know, I could come forward and think, you know, my project's the best thing ever, and, you know, and have a lot of maybe, qualitative kind of, you know, evidence or whatever behind that. But I think focusing it on like evidence-based projects, I think would be probably more beneficial in a lot of ways. I don't want to shortchange anybody and, you know, ruin anybody's fun, but at the end of the day, we really are looking at evidence-based practices.
That's a very good point. We discovered that too when we were evaluating all of our pilots from the past, is that it was very challenging to figure out, okay, what is the best practice, given that some of the data was, oh, everybody felt really great about it.
I just would add that to be careful not to get too caught up in the research base, because part of innovative means it's kind of before it's all started. So somehow finding a balance between the two, right? Because if something is truly innovative, meaning you've just started, it may not have all the research-based evidence yet. So I totally hear what Mr. Stark is saying, but just trying to find that balance.
Well, I think you're going to have some of that in your innovations in accelerating student progress. Mm-hmm. To me, that would be a natural to be able to garner some evidence from these, given that the purpose there is to accelerate a student's progress through a pathway or whatever program.
And one of the items on the project outline that they need to answer to is to describe the impact this innovation project had on you know, students and outcomes. We did put one phrase with extra points for including specific data. And, you know, when we're creating our rubric too, we can weight those more heavily in places that have more data to support that it's an effective practice.
And I don't know if you can do this, but innovations in placement and innovations in replicable models of placement, in other words, that resulted in jobs, that resulted in actual placement. You know, people got jobs and got employed and moved forward. In a community college world, it's beginning to move towards completion and success, and replicable programs that can lead to actual employment.
That's an awesome add-on. I'm going to put that in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it seems to be suggested in innovations and pathways, but yeah. I agree. I mean, it should be called out explicitly.
Yeah.
So, can you, do you mind if I ask you a few more?
Sure.
All right. So, share with us your thoughts. I know that this isn't set in stone. How is this going to be judged? How are you going to determine who gets the awards here?
It's a great question. So, I mean, one thing is that we want to see what we get to. Like, we don't know what we're going to get yet. And once we see the kinds of things that we get, we can see, we can work as a committee for the conference committee and look at, you know, what ways do we want to measure these. I mean, if we don't get tons, then that'll be easier to decide who's winning. But I think that's another aspect that needs to be worked out, is what is the rubric, what are the different components that we want to look for, how do we want to score them. It's something that hasn't been worked out yet, but it might be easier to work it out when we have papers in front of us. I know that when we were trying to figure out how to put in those pilot programs, we thought, oh, we gave everybody enough, you know, information to effectively give us the data we needed, and it wasn't until we got them back that we were like, oh, wait a minute, we needed to do this a whole different way, and then we were able to more clearly figure out how to score those pilot projects once we got them back and we saw what kind of evidence they provided. So my thought is that it will be something, the rubric will be something that we'll create in the committee, but it might be better done later once we start getting some of these nomination forms.
Okay.
And it's our first time.
Right. Okay. Any other questions for
just
Michelle?
A comment. I really want to congratulate the Lyric team. I just really appreciate all your work in producing some extraordinary work.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate the deep degree of thought and preparation that you're putting into these materials. Really appreciate it.
Great hiring committees, apparently.
Apparently.
Well done.
Yes, remember that well. Okay, thank you, Ms. Steele. And now we go to board member reports. So we want to start off with, why don't we go left to right with Montebello?
Been there, done that. I'm good.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Mr. Stark.
I think I've bloviated enough today.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm gonna go last. Dr. Miller?
I would agree. I think we've all had our opportunity today. I'll just say that LACCD continues to work hard in the adult ed arena. We're working at different, we're making progress. The student success funding formula continues to be a challenge for us to get our arms around. There is a threat to adult ed funding in the community college world because the adult ed funding is not treated the same in the new funding formula as it was in the last, and over time we're going to have to be working on that, and we'll have further discussions about that. And Dr. Mullen continues to do a fantastic job, as do our adult ed deans.
I'm good.
You're good, and I'm really good. Okay, so given that, we will now move on to discussion and action items section. And we have action item 6.1 to approve LARIC's legislative agenda resolution. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the resolution as it is written in item 6.1.
And do we have a second?
I second it.
Seconded by Ms. Huckes from Montebello. All right, and do we have any discussion?
Just two quick comments. I really want to thank my colleagues on the board for supporting this, especially Dr. Miller for co-sponsoring. And then given the comment just shared, I think that's a great opportunity for LARIC to help in terms of working together on perhaps a legislative agenda around that topic you brought up about student funding formula. I think, you know, for too long, I think we've advocated in our various silos and camps. I think if we were to actually come together as five powerhouse districts and really aligning those resources with a common message around, you know, particularly a student funding formula, I think that would be very powerful. So, looking forward to that. Thanks again.
Any other comments, discussion? All right, it is now time for the vote. All those in favor of approving LARIC's legislative agenda resolution as presented in item 6.1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? And the motion carries. So now we have action item 6.2, approving the AIR proposal for professional learning communities, PLCs, professional development. And we need a motion.
I
move approval.
I move. See what happens when you come from a conference. I move to approve the proposal for the professional learning communities, PD, by AIR.
And do we have a second?
Second.
All right. And do we have any discussion? No discussion? All right. And so, given that that is the case, we will now take the vote. All those in favor of approving item 6.2, the AIR proposal for professional learning communities, PD, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Yahoo!
And now we have item 6.3. This is regarding changing of the date for the December LARIC regular meeting. December 21st is vacation time for some member districts. And so it would be either to move the meeting to December 14th or to cancel and have the meeting as scheduled in January. We would need a motion, of course, to entertain this change of date for December.
So I guess this would be a question for staff, you know, broken record on this. Is there a particular reason why we would need to meet? I want to make sure we're not missing a deadline or we need to take action on something. Just want to make sure we're on track. Any staff want to?
Great. Do we have any budget stuff due in November?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. Right? That's really fun.
For December 1st.
Expenditure reports are
December 1st,
so long before the December 21st date anyway.
I see Dr. Mullen shaking her head.
We were just confirming that it doesn't require a
board for the after.
Right. It's just they're certifying on the 30th, correct? Yes. Correct, but that's the process you would, like you just did the other day, right? Okay.
Right. And so far with NOVA, pretty much we go in, we put in the information. It hasn't required the information to come back to board.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
All right. So therefore then, does someone want to make a motion regarding changing the date for December?
I would move that we cancel the December meeting and defer to January.
All right. Then we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. And do we have discussion? No? No discussion? All right. So all those in favor of the motion as presented to cancel the December LARIC regular board meeting and to continue then in January with the scheduled meeting, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. All right. Now we have the consent item agenda. Board members, is there a request? Well, we did that at the beginning in asking that it be moved to the action item agenda. There was no request at that time. So do we have a motion then to accept the consent items as presented?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
And any discussion? Nope. All right. All those in favor of accepting the consent agenda items as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And we have the consent items approved. We have a special meeting, workshop, that begins at 4 o'clock, which is in just a few moments. So unless there are any other closing comments that the board members have, we would close this meeting at 3:53 p.m. And we will convene at 4 o'clock right here in this very room. That is correct. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Nice job.
Okay. I think I can do that.